It's Janet Berger. I'm going to go ahead and chant the first line. Let me just repeat after me. Om Mauna Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Yuvanam. Om Mauna Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Yuvanam. Varashishtam Te Vasidrishiganai Ravritam Brahma Nishtai. Varashishtante Vasidrishiganai Ravritam Brahma Nishtai. Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudram Anandamurtim. Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudram Anandamurtim. Swatma Ramam Muditavadanam Dakshinamurtimide. Swatma Ramam Muditavadanam Dakshinamurtimide. Repeat after we'll repeat verse 1 and then we'll do verse 2. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyan nijantaragatam. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyan nijantaragatam. Pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivodbhutam yatha nidraya. Pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivodbhutam yatha nidraya. Yasakshat kurute prabodha samaye swatmanamevadvayam. Yasakshat kurute prabodha samaye swatmanamevadvayam. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye nama idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye nama idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Then,
give it to me. Bijasyantari vankaro jagadidam. Bijasyantari vankaro jagadidam. Prangnirvikalpam punaha. Prangnirvikalpam punaha. Maya kalpita desha kala kalana. Maya kalpita desha kala kalana. Vaichitri chitri kritam. Vaichitri chitri kritam. Maya viva vijimbayatyapi maha. Maya viva vijimbayatyapi maha. Yogi vayasvechaya. Yogi vayasvechaya. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye nama idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye nama idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Sandhi. Bijasya antar antaha iva ankuraha. So bijasya antaha iva ankuraha. It's one compound. No, it isn't. It's two. Bijasya antaha iva, second word, ankuraha. Jagat idam prak prak nirvikalpam punaha. Maya kalpita desha kala kalana. By Chitriya, Chitri Kritam. Mayavi Iva. Mayavi Iva. Vijrimbayati. Vijrimbayati Api. Mahayogi Iva. Yaha Swechaya. Swaichaya. Swechaya. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namaha Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Yeah? No, because the prayer verse is the first. So that's our prayer. So here, a bija is a seed, like the seed, like what we do in gardening, it's a seed. So bijasya, inside, an antara, inside of a seed, antara, anta is inside, bijasya antara, inside of a seed. So bijas antara, sandhi, eva, ankuraha, eva is like. So ankuraha is a sprout. So we would say, like a sprout, an ankura, which is inside of a seed, a manifest condition. Bijasya antara eva ankure, ankuraha. So like a sprout, like a sprout, which is inside antaha, bijasya, of a seed. Jagat idam, this universe, this maya, this whole universe, manifest universe, jagat idam, this universe, prang prak, prang is prak, nirvikalpam. This universe is nirvikalpa before. The universe is in nirvikalpa, non-dual, before manifestation, is the idea, before the universe is in seed form, means an unmanifest condition, right? Before it becomes manifest. So it is this universe is in nirvikalpa, like nirvikalpa samadhi. It's in its causal condition that has no ajnana. I'll explain that in a bit. So prior to the manifestation of the universe, like a sprout in a seed, the universe is in unmanifest condition, right? Nirvikalpa, without any duality, no vikalpa there. Okay, no see or seeing subject object. It's an unmanifest condition. And then punaha, and then again. Again means again the universe comes. First it's like a seed, it's like a sprout in a seed, and then the seed sprouts. When the seed sprouts, before the seed sprouts, the sprout is there in causal condition, in the maya, which is in unmanifest causal condition. That seed sprouts. But then different from the one seed sprouting, once the seed sprout, it grows, and then it drops other seeds. But here, this seed sprouts, and then decides to go back into the seed. So like a seed sprouting, but then going back again, the seed sprouts again. That's the nature of the universe. The universe is in unmanifest condition, causal condition, comes into manifestation, stays for some long period of time, and then goes back into manifest condition, and again sprouts, and then comes back from beginningless time. In fact, that is why we say that maya is beginningless, because there's this continual activity taking place. Now the creation is here, now it's not. Now the creation is here, now it's in causal condition. Now it's here, it's in causal condition. How long has this been going on? When was the first time it sprouted from causal condition? So this cycle has been going on from beginningless time. And this maya, which sprouts from beginningless time, has its adhishtana, the truth of the maya, that which maya depends upon for its being, in Brahman, in the Satchitatma. Okay? So after having, before the sprouting, it is nirvikalpa. It sprouts, it becomes the creation. Then again, it goes back into nirvikalpa. Again, it sprouts. So let's look at this next verse, which elaborates. Maya kalupita desha kala kalana vaichitriya chitri kritam. Now this whole line is a compound. It functions as one word in the sentence, but it's comprised of many words. Maya is maya, that which is made of the sattva, rajas, and tamas, and is responsible for that it itself has parinamas. When it manifests, it manifests in a variety of ways. Not non-dual. It's not non-dual. It is responsible for the manifestation of the entire creation, which is a multiplicity, so they say. So Maya, Kalpita, I'll just give you the words, projected, Desha, space, Kala, time, Kalana, projected or created, Vaichitriya, manifest diversity, Chitri Kritam, it's made into a picture. A chitra is a picture. Okay. So here it says, this universe, which is made into a variegated, like a painting, a multiplicity, the whole universe manifests, it has many, many, it has infinite diversity. You know, it's very colorful. Vichitra means that it's colorful, it's diverse, it's multifold. So it's like a picture. It's not that the universe is a picture. It's always moving. But it comes forward like an infinite the infinite picture of the universe, which is in continual motion. So what it says here, it's kind of like Eva, like a picture, like a diverse, multifold picture. Chitri Kritam, Vaichitri, Chitri Kritam. Kalana, which is... which can take place, means the diversity, the manifoldness can take place because of the kalana. The kalana is which is allowed to take place by desha and kala, by time and space. If you remove time and space, then there's no room for anything else, right? So the whole, everything that exists within time and space has to have time and space and that dimension. So it says that which is kind of depends upon the projection of the time and space, everything within that is so manifest diversity, you know, that comes along with the time and space. They want you to know that time and space is part of the painting, is part of the projection, and everything exists within the time and space, exists within time, within space and change. That's the idea. And that desha kala, the whole picture, along with time and space, kalpita, is projected, is created by Maya. When we say created, why sometimes Swamiji uses for kalpita, it is projected because it's not a real creation, that somebody is creating this. And so it's actually a projection as though, but then you don't want to think of a projector either. You know, there's no projector there. So it comes into being. You can say this whole thing comes into being by means of Maya, because of Maya. Maya, when it manifests in this form. So when Maya has manifest, we say the creation has come into being. Maya has manifest itself. Okay, so that's a way to understand that. So Maya, projected by Maya, desha kala, time and space, kalana, because of which this manifold diversity is there. Without the time and space, it's been one of the elements that couldn't happen. So time and space are necessary. Without time, there's no change, or without change, there's no time. These two are very interrelated. Okay, so you need to be able to mark change, you know. And so time marks change. Both are interdependent. Okay. So, so here it says, so for the bija, the ankura, which is as though inside of the seed. So, like for the sprout, which is there in unmanifest nirvikalpa condition inside of the seed, inside of the seed, jagadidam, this creation is prong, is nirvikalpa. For this creation, the creation is nirvikalpa. Before this jagat comes, before that, it is like the sprout in the seed, in nirvikalpa condition, non-dual condition, and then again it comes again, and when it comes as the universe, what is that? What does that look like? And how does that come into manifestation? How does the seed come about? Maya. From the nirvikalpa to the vikalpa, Maya kalpita desha kala kalana vaichitri chitri kritam. Okay. I want to say just a few words about about nirvikalpa in reference to Maya. For us, jivas within the Maya, we call that Maya ajnanam. Ajnanam because Maya itself is said to have, or ajnanam itself, Maya ajnanam, I'll have to tell you which is which. Maya and ignorance. Ignorance is really from the other side of Maya, right, where your sense organs and mind are limited. So the limited jiva comes from ajnanam. The whole creation comes from Maya. So Maya and ajnanam can be used as synonyms. But the ajnanam is on this level, the ajnanam is going to be referring to the jiva as coming, the condition of the jiva that comes from that Maya. And then Ishvara is going to be called coming from the Maya itself. So let me just talk about that for a minute. We say that Maya has a twofold capacity. One is to cover, the other is to project. Okay. For Ishvara, of this twofold capacity, for Ishvara it is only the capacity to project, because there's no ajnanam. That's why Swamiji says that projection is the projection of infinite knowledge. But for the jiva, the one who is projected from that infinite knowledge and is part of the projection, that Maya functions as ajnanam for the jiva. It gives self-ignorance for the jiva, because, and other ignorance too, we keep going on in the creation, removing the ignorance that is there. Because the knowledge, the way things are, is already present, but the mind doesn't have knowledge of that. And so our sense organs and mind are used to gain knowledge of objects, you know, the objects that require the pramana. You're actually uncovering the ajnanam as you're gaining knowledge of that. Because what is there and as it is there is already present, but you just don't know it, right? So the reality, the whole reality of the entire creation is already here as it is, but you don't have knowledge of it. So that ignorance has to be removed. But for Ishvara, the one who has the whole Maya Upadhi in his hand, so to speak, when this creation comes, there is no ajnanam, because there's no, the whole entire projection is myself. There's no ajnanam to take myself to, there's no identity with a given object or a given being in the projection. In the projection of the creation, nor is there any limitation in terms of my experience of the creation. Whereas for the jiva within the creation, there's a tremendous amount of limitation. Right? You, as your body, mind, sense organs, are extremely limited in reference to the whole infinite creation. Whereas for Ishvara, whole creation is like his form or like his mind. The entire infinite creation is reflected by consciousness from the standpoint of Ishvara. So we'll say his abhimana, his sense of self in reference to the creation, is the entire creation. His sense of me is the entire creation. Where for the jiva, the sense of me, you know, only extends really to the body, and the body, then the mind, the sense organs, everything that's internal to the body, but the sense of me doesn't go out here. Whereas for Ishvara, the sense of the abhimana, it's called the abhimana, is for the whole entire creation. So we say for Ishvara, the Maya simply, there's two terms, avarna vikshepa. The Maya simply projects. And when the Maya is projected, it's like coming out of nirvikalpa samadhi for Ishvara. If you're coming out of nirvikalpa samadhi, there's something to come out of. Right, so that means that the Ishvara is Maya in unmanifest condition. Maya in unmanifest condition is likened to nirvikalpa samadhi, because there's no ajnanam. For you, your coming out of unmanifest condition is coming out of deep sleep. So in the state of deep sleep, which is the Maya Upadi, in causal condition, there is a covering. The mind goes into, the mind itself goes into its causal condition, which is Ajnana. So there's the big, I don't know anything. But when you, as a jiva, go have Nirvikalpa Samadhi, the mind is awake, but it is resolved into the Atma. Right? The mind is awake, but it resolves into the Atma. So that's Nirvikalpa Samadhi for you. When the whole creation goes into a manifest condition, we say it goes into not Ajnanam, not to an unknowing, it just is like abiding as the Satchit Atma with this Maya capacity in unmanifest condition. So that means for Ishwara or for Brahman, the creation projects and then resolves into me, not into Ajnanam. It projects and it resolves into the self. It projects and resolves into the self from beginningless time. Being an incidental attribute of the self, not bringing about any duality or change to the self. Whereas for the jiva, there's not just vikshepa, there's what we call avarna. There's a covering, because this Maya that we enjoy, and also the creative power of Maya that we also enjoy, is backed by ignorance. The ignorance of, I don't really know myself, I haven't differentiated the self, and yet I have all of this Maya capacity. But this Maya capacity, because I'm a part of the whole, not the whole itself, that part is limited. And since it is, and all of my means of knowledge are limited, I don't have a means of knowledge that available to me that I'm wearing around with me, like I take my sense organs wherever I go, I take my mind where I go. Now these are connected to me. But I have no means of knowledge to give me self-knowledge. That's not connected. And so I move around within this manifest creation. Remember that this body, mind, sense organs is part of that manifestation. Right? The truth of you is Brahman, the same Brahman that the whole Maya Upadi resolves into, that truth that you that is yourself. But this body, mind, sense organs is part of the manifestation, not the manifestation. And so that means that you are a part to the whole, and your body, mind, sense organs are actually, in reference to the whole, barely visible. When you think about the infinite creation, this body, mind, sense organs only has a limited sphere of knowledge. Right? And there is no, and you have pramanas, means of knowledge, to keep increasing that sphere within duality. You have what you need to gain knowledge within duality. But you don't have a means of knowledge to gain the one because of whom these pramanas work, because of whom things are known. There is no means of knowledge that you're carrying around with you to create that viveka. And the ignorance is so profound, really, because everyone else is in the same situation, so it's shared experience, that's one thing. But the other thing is that what was I going to say? Just a minute. Give me a minute. I want to get that little thing together. The other thing is that the jiva upadis were designed to participate in the world. That's what they're for. Subject object, so that there's an experiencer and experience in the world. They're not designed to know the reality of the world or the reality of the self. Good, because only a few people want that. Swamiji and Chok. There's only very few people that want it. That's why a person who wants self knowledge or even has that desire is considered very rare, and the mumukshas are all very highly honored, actually. Even Bhagawan, as though speaking, as he will speak in the Bhagavad Gita, will say the mumukshu, really, the jignasu, the one who wants to know me, and the jnani, the one who knows me, they are most dear to me. And then he said, the Jnani, and this is a little bit different, but still, he said, the Jnani is the most dear to me. And so then the student will say, that's favoritism. But then you can make some kind of answer. No, it's not favoritism. It's not favoritism. It's that the Jnanasu wants to know me, wants to be with me, wants to know. And so that makes me love him or her. But that isn't the answer. That's just an answer that will come to your mind. But that's not what it is. That's not what it is. It's that the Jnani is the most dear to me, because the Jnani is the one who has self-knowledge. Okay, and so who is the Jnani self? The Jnani who has self-knowledge. Who is the self of the Jnani? It's me, Brahman. Brahman. Brahman is the most dear. That's its swarupa. That's its nature. That which is most beloved, that which is most dear, because it's Ananda. And so the Jnani is the Atma, which is the most dear, even to me as Ishwara. Who is the most dear? The Self. The Self is Ananda. So, for the Jnani, who is the Jnani? The Jnani is the Self, which is, by its very swarupa, the most dear. So, when Ishwara says, or Krishna says, who is the most dear? The Jnani is the most dear, because the Jnani is my very Self. And my very Self, by its own nature, is the most beloved, the most dear. So it's a teaching in that. It's not like favoritism. The whole verse goes like something like this. That there are different types of bhakti. Different types of bhakti. The first type is the one who doesn't think of Bhagavan very much. He's there in the background. And comes to the foreground whenever anything goes wrong. Yeah. So whenever anything goes wrong, then I, Bhagavan, please come and help me. Please save me. Please get me out of this situation. So that's still, he's still a bhakta. It's just that Bhagavan is kind of in the background, and when I need him, then I reach out. Then I reach out. Otherwise, I just go my own way, right? Then there's another type of bhakta, and that one is also will reach out to Bhagavan when there's something going wrong. Please save me. Please help me. But also, that person wants Bhagavan to bless all of my undertakings. So, and like in India, we would all always do that. If you have an undertaking, you're going to start something, you always do a puja first. Some sort of puja, some sort of ritual to get Bhagavan's blessings. Please, Bhagavan, bless this. Take away all of the obstacles, you know, so that I can be successful in this pursuit. And so you call on that third factor, Bhagavan's grace, to help you go forward, you know. There's those two. Those two types are just jivas existing in samsara, you know, who are trying to make their way in the world and have shraddha in Bhagavan. But my raga dvesha is toward accomplishing this and getting this and getting rid of that and getting rid of this. I'm just really a samsari who wants Bhagavan's help and asks for it. So there's shraddha there. Ishwara is part of the life. But he's not the biggest, most important thing. The things that you're trying to do and accomplish, those are the most important things, and you want Bhagavan's help to be able to do that. But still, the bhakti is there. The third type is the jignasu, the one who wants to know, the one who wants to gain self-knowledge, the one who wants, as Krishna will say, the one who wants to actually know me. That jignasa, that person is a jignasu. You know? And so that's a different kind of bhakti, because that bhakti is, or the commitment is not to getting this or that or the other thing so that I can be happy. The commitment is that of an adhikari, of a mumukshu, of a jignasu. What I want is to know you. I want to know. So I invoke Bhagavan's grace to help me know. to gain that knowledge. So that's a different type. These are like in two different orders of interest. So the jignyasu is the one who wants to know the self, to know me, to know Ishwara. And then the fourth type is the jnani. The jnani is the one who knows the self, who has gained that knowledge. Also a bhakta. But now for the jnani, the bhakti is not let me know you, but it's a continual bhakti toward the whole, which includes the self. So for the jnani, all of this is Ishwara. Mm. And the nature of the self also is the very self of Ishwara. So the jnani actually recognizes that the whole jiva actually resolves into Ishwara, and every part of the jiva just becomes mithya. Right? There is nothing here but Ishwara. And so the jnani and the mumukshu also are seeing this, that everything, let everything I do as a jiva, let that just be, you know, a worship of Bhagavan. That Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. So for the jignyasu, that's a practice. You know, let me see everything as Ishwara. Let everything be a worship of Ishwara. All of my actions in the world, let those be a worship of Ishwara. And let me receive all of the things that come my way as prasad. Like in the temple, when the prasad is given out after the worship is done, then the prasad is what you get back. So you're worshiping, you're performing an ongoing puja to Ishwara in everything that you do, and the results of what you do are the prasad that comes back after the puja. So that's the karma yoga buddhi. That's the buddhi of the jignyasu. The buddhi of the difference between the buddhi of the jignyasu and the buddhi of the jnani is that kartritvam is no longer there. The karta, as though I have to do puja. Let all of my actions, you know, be a puja or a worship of the Lord. And now let me receive everything as prasad. So that ahankara is still there. But the thing is, with that type of attitude, when we have that type of attitude, then the ahankara becomes very dilated. You know, very dilated. It's something becomes more and more unnoticeable for the jnani, because all of your intentions are really only toward Ishwara and receiving everything as prasad. So you have what Swamiji will say. You have a buddhi which is just a hair's breadth different than the buddhi of the jnani. That's why this karma yoga is so profound, because you're relating to Ishwara. The hankaras is still there, but you're relating to Ishwara in the way that it actually is. You know? But for the jnani, that ahankara is not there. All of this is Ishwara, including the self. I am Ishwara. Even to say all of this is Ishwara is third person. I am means not the body, mind, sense organs, but that this conscious being is the self of Ishwara. So there is everything, the subject and the object, the doer and the done, all of it is Ishwara. And so here I am with this jiva upadi looking out of my sense organs and acting and doing this and doing that, and, you know, the little head of the jiva, you know, pops out every now and then. You know, and then with my knowledge and my knowing how to do inner child work or whatever it is, I just, you know, resolve those little problems back into my own self. Whenever the head of the jiva pops out. Bam! But with love. With love.
With love, yes.
Just bring back to myself. But when all is well with me and there's nothing popping up, you know, then there really is just Ishwara, and I am, in a sense, Swamiji said like this before, kind of along for the ride. In a sense, I don't have the kartritvam or the doership where I think that I'm the one who is responsible for my life. I enjoy the unfoldment of my prarabdha, of the prarabdha of this body, mind, sense organs in my life. And enjoy means it's fine, whatever it is. this time around, this is the prarabdha. These are the experiences that are coming my way. These are the challenges that come my way. And I just, I be with them, really, with that prasada buddhi. That is what is natural. It's not that I think I have to act in the creation in a particular way. It's just that is the my natural way to act. Yeah. And also, the raga dvesha are come up because they're part of the prarabdha. That's an important thing to understand. It's not that the jiva doesn't have any desires, because the desires motivate you to act. So the desires, they say, any desire that you have, it can either come out of your psyche, a desire, I want to do this, and that motivates you to act, or the desire for the fulfillment of your prarabdha, or the desire will come out of another person. I need you to do this. Will you help me? Can you come and help me? Or we want you to do this job, or whatever, something that pulls you in. That's another. And then the third thing that creates the situation is what's called anicca. Nobody's desiring it. No jiva's desiring it. It's what's happening in Bhagavan, and you find yourself in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's an environmental situation that you find that has happened to you. You know, like for natural disasters, for instance, nobody's sitting around, oh, let's have a natural disaster. But the natural disaster happens, and there you are. Or a war, or any of these things that happen in the creation, there you are, in the middle of it. Nobody asked for it. So you're involved in a collective karma. And say, but that also creates the situation, and that also is part of the prarabdha. And so, when we have that understanding, you just simply are responding to and engaging in the life that you can use language like Bhagavan gave you, or the life that this jiva, this person here, is included in. So whatever from birth to death, the major environmental situation with the major people in my life, those are the prarabdha karma. And if you've noticed, you know, those people don't just come and go, or the situations just don't come and go because you want them to. You know, like let's bring this situation to an end now. How many times, you know? Or I want to move. I think it's time to move. You know? Nope. Mm-hmm. For me right now, I would really like to retire from my job. That's time. I'm sure. I really feel that it's time now. It's time to do that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 6 months later, you know, I really feel it's time. Yes. Time. It's time to do that. A year later, same thing. Until it's time, mm-hmm. And then when it's time, you cannot stop it. Mm-hmm. You can say no, it's not time yet. Wait, no, it's time. It's time. And so we get used, we start to understand the prarabdha, you know, and don't think that you have all so much control over the whole thing. You don't have control over it, really. You have control of how you are in it, you know, how you respond to that because of the free will, you know, and who you are at the time. You have the means to be whatever way you are in that situation. And that's where you're accruing karma, is how do you handle the situation? It's like a test. This is a test. Every moment, how are you going to handle the situation? Are you going to handle the situation with love, with dharma? You know, are you going to be a dharmi? That's enough to say, are you going to be a dharmi in this situation and do what's needed to be done? Or is your need for a certain type of pleasure going to cover the dharma that is being called for? Your own desires cause you to kind of circumvent that, go around the dharma, you know, in order to fulfill your desire. And so now you get a little piece of pop up there. Yeah. How are you going? So that's just a way of seeing it. That's where your free will comes in, and that's where your manana shravana, I mean, your sadhana, that's where your sadhana comes in. because over time you actually choose, always naturally choose Dharma, not because you're thinking, should I do Dharma or Adharma? It's just because you don't have that conflict with your desires. You don't have a conflict with your desires. You always choose Dharma. Like you, a human being will choose Dharma if there's no conflict, because Dharma is what is natural to the creation. Dharma is the kind of the guts, the structure of the creation. So you will choose Dharma unless there is an obstruction. And for an Ajnani, there are many obstructions, which we call your likes and dislikes. They're not non-binding desires, they're binding desires. A non-binding desire means I'll do this if it's within Dharma, and if it's not, I won't. I don't need to have a happy experience because of my own swarupa. Okay, so this ajnanam, so I was talking about the bhakti now. The bhakta, there's these four types of bhakti, just to bring it back, there's these four types of bhakti, you know. And as you become rooted in your knowledge, you know, what it's just, I am Ishwara. I am Ishwara. The jiva raises its head less and less and less. When it raises its head, raga dvesha is raising its head. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. And that conflicts with, sometimes with Dharma, sometimes it doesn't conflict at all. So, here, in this creation, once it's projected, what I was talking to just bring us back, what I was talking about is the nature of the projection itself, that when it projects as Ishwara, that when the creation projects from the standpoint of Ishwara, the projection is just what we call vikshepa. When it projects, when we're looking at those who are in the projection, it's not just vikshepa, there is avarana. There's avarana, which is a covering of myself because of the limitation of the upadhi. I said the sense organs that we have, that we use, are only directed outward, not inward, you know. And so that avarana, gaining that means of knowledge, it's not built into the body, gaining that means of knowledge requires mumukshutvam, because the gaining of the means of knowledge is... the gaining of the means of knowledge is brought to you because it is required, because you are a mumukshu. When you are a mumukshu, means that you need, now it's time, you really need to know what's going on and who am I. It's not a fake question. If the bondage is very real and my ignorance is real and I need to know. And so when that happens, that condition will attract the pramana that's necessary to take care of you in that way. Until that happens, and just imagine for yourself beginningless lifetimes, it doesn't need to happen. You can go on living as a samsari and, you know, fulfilling your desires to the best of your ability, following Dharma to the best of your ability, and then just take birth after birth after birth after birth until at some point you become a mumukshu and you say, this isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. Not because of me, but because of the nature of the creation. There is nothing that I can count on to have anything but really momentary existence, and then I become a mumukshu. So, that's a story in this creation. So now... I can think of a lot of different things to laugh about at this moment. So now, the thing is who is the Ishwara? Who is the creator here? So what he says is, Maya vi eva vidrimbayati api mahayogi yaha swechaya. Who is the creator? Yaha, the one who, like a mayavi. A mayavi, maya, in just its secular meaning, it means a magician. So mayavi is the one who wields maya, who wields the magic. So like a magician, or, so a mayavi vidrimbayati, he spreads out the maya. Vidrim means to to spread out or to expand. What that means is now it's time for the causal state to come out, to expand, right, into the creation. Or it's time for the little sprout in the seed to come up now, to grow. It's in time when it's time for the creation to come. It's there in causal and nirvikalpa condition. And now it's time for it to expand, you know, to come forward. You can say to be created, but he's using this word for the whole thing to come into manifestation. So like a Mayavi bringing forth this magic, or the Mahayogi, or like the Mahayogi. The Mahayogi is the one who has siddhis. We don't really have siddhis like that anymore. But one yogi, one Mahayogi in the literature and in the mythology is called the, I don't remember what his name was, but Trishanku. You know that story? The story of Trishanku. Trishanku wanted to be able to get into Indra's heaven. And he had done something that irritated Indra, and Indra wouldn't let him in to that loka. No. And somehow this Mahayogi had some fondness for Trishanku and was also irritated that Indra would not let him in to that, to the heaven. And so he said to Trishanku, I will create your own world, your own heaven for you, an intermediary space. And this Mahayogi created this world for Trishanku to live in. So like a Mahayogi who has these tremendous siddhis, you know, to astral travel, to go visit all the different lokas, to find that, to put yourself in two or three places at the same time, to be here but to take another body elsewhere, to be able to read minds. All of these siddhis are there. The Mahayogi has these siddhis. But also the siddhi to create the magic. In Tripura Rahasya, which is a really sweet book, actually, it tells story after story of these worlds being created like a dream. A person falls into the world, that world, and lives an alternate life for maybe three or four generations, comes back, and then in the Tripura Rahasya, they'll tell the story of all of the generations and the children that were born, you know, and what they did and their grandchildren. It's a very complicated life that they lay out, very successful, beautiful life. It was great, and the person became a great king in this particular story. And then he went to what Narada had sent this person down to get a drink of water, and when he took the drink of water, all of a sudden he was into this world. Taking the drink of water catapulted him into this world. And then he took a drink of water again, but within that world, and he was catapulted back into this world. He had spent generations of raising a family in this world, and 5 minutes had passed. 5 minutes in this world. And so that was a trick that Narada is the great trickster and the great Mahayogi who does all kinds of things to fool people or trick people or give them experiences like this. So the Tripura Rahasya is a good book to read to get a grip on how they view Maya, you know. Tripura, Tripura, Rahasya, Rahasya, Tripura Rahasya. The secret, I think it means the secret of the three cities, something like that, Tripura Rahasya. But it tells all kinds of stories of Maya, you know. And it's similar, and so the one who's bringing about most of these situations is Narada, the great trickster, the great yogi who is always playing tricks on people and creating situations. You know? So he created a situation for this guy. And he comes back 5 minutes later, you know, what just happened? How am I back here? And then he remembers it's only been like 5 minutes, but what about all of that? What happened? It also shows the mityatva of time, because we even experience that in this creation. Time sometimes time passes very slowly. Sometimes it passes very, very quickly. So, like a Mayavi, the one who swechaya, from his own, out of his own desire, creates this creation, takes from the unmanifest into the manifest. So, tasmai shri gurumurtiye namaidam shri dakshinamurtiye. So, salutations to Dakshinamurti, the first teacher, who is my guru, who is now my guru, showing the parampara. In making me kind of understand this magic show, the magic show of Maya, which we are part of. And you really think about it, you know, there's so many, this universe, there's no, in the universe that we experience, there really isn't, from the standpoint of the Atma, a subtle and gross. I'm not making the Atma into a knower now, but I mean just from the standpoint of the Atma. What I mean by that is, if you have an imagination, in the imagination there's the subtle and the gross, right? There's the sense organs of the mind that you're experiencing, through which you're experiencing the world. But from the standpoint of the projection itself, there's not a division as though there's a subtle world and then there's a gross world, as though they're different. The whole thing is made of is consciousness. That's what I'm trying to say. Within the world, there's the subtle world and the gross world. There are the subtle sense organs and the gross physical eyes, the subtle mind and the physical brain. You know, there's this physical world that we live in that's not something that's coming from the imagination of the jiva. But from the standpoint of Ishwara, the whole thing is a projection of Maya. If the whole thing is a projection of Maya, that subtle and gross is within Maya, but from the outside, from the standpoint of Maya, all of it is Maya. You know, it's Maya. It's something that comes into being and resolves, and comes into being and resolves. It's not like a big, say this whole creation comes into being, and then you have a physical world. Now when it's time for the dissolution, do you think that we have to get out the wrecking crew to take the world, you know, dismantle the world? It's like here, we need the wrecking crew or the carpenters to dismantle and to build. But from the standpoint of Maya, you don't build your dream. You know, you go, okay, it's time to build the dream now. We don't build the dream. The dream is a manifestation of knowledge. We also don't, from within the dream, we don't deconstruct it either. It goes into its causal condition. And so this creation is more like an infinite mind, you know, which within the infinite mind, the infinite imagination, it can be divided internally into subtle and gross, you know, the sense organs and the sattva rajas tamas is called subtle, and then the gross is called man, that tamas that has gone through panchikarna. But all of it is just knowledge, really. We like to call it knowledge because the flexibility of that is then understood. You know, if you look at it as like mind, then you can understand so many things. Like you can understand synchronicity and acausal connections, this type of thing, because it's just one infinite mind and the communication is throughout that material. So things start to make sense. Why do prayers work? What is the efficacy of prayers? You know, why do sometimes when you have a deep relationship with a person, there's a connectedness which takes place even when they're halfway around the world? Like say this, let me just give an example. Say for instance, there's somebody that you're very tied to, you're very close to. If you want them to call, they'll often call, that type of thing. There's a connection. Why is it that when you go around the world, you meet somebody that you know in some, you know, small little town somewhere. What are the chances of that? And this happens so frequently. Oh, if you tell somebody, yes, that's happened to me. You know, there's just this interconnectedness that we experience all the time. If you have a deep relationship, like a family relationship or a marriage or a child, if they're in trouble or if they're angry or something, you feel it inside. You feel them. You know. That's an interconnectedness that is there, because it's like one interconnected mind.
Yes.
It's Ishwara's mind. But from us in here, within Ishwara's mind, right, these jivas all have a sense of limitation. They are limited. But they're not limited in terms of Ishwara. From Ishwara's perspective, they're all interconnected parts of a whole. Right? One subtle, infinite mind that from within is divided into subtle and gross. So it is in that way like an infinite magic show, you know, or an infinite manifestation of knowledge, an infinite manifestation of knowledge, I would say. Infinite mind, Ishwara's mind, which only gets these dualities and divisions from within that infinite mind. And from my standpoint of the self, I am absolutely, another magic, I am absolutely free and untouched. And from this one who is non-dual, free and untouched, cyclically comes the manifestation of this infinite intelligence, infinite mind. And that's another thing. As we go on through life, even when we don't have self-knowledge, we always experience things, have little experiences that show us it's not just an inert creation, that it's an infinite mind. An infinite mind that is taking care of things just naturally, without having to be a little man sitting up in heaven, you know. If the whole creation is interconnected, and being interconnected, like every part of it is taking care of itself, taking care of everyone, everything in it, every one of its parts. This body is doing its best to do that too, to take care, you know. You have free will, so you can, of course, kill yourself or, you know, eat Hostess Twinkies and Cokes all day. Things like that then cause the body to erupt as it's trying to save itself. You know? But it's not, the body's not against itself. It's trying to help you, you know. And the universe is trying to help also. But then we're not always that cooperative. It's still, it'll try to help you. So it doesn't quit. Bhagavan doesn't quit trying to help you. It's just, we can be very challenging with our free will and our raga dvesha and our addictions and our habits and all of that. You know, addictions. The mind has addictions. It's not just to drugs and alcohol. We have many, many, many different kinds of addictions. You know, so it's hard to rein those things in, to do the dharma, what is dharma for the body and mind and sense organs. It's really, I think, just in, I know for myself, it's addictions. You have to break the addiction, and there's not one or two types of addictions. There are many, many types of addictions. I'll just tell you this and then we'll stop. I used to have an addiction for books. And this is before Kindle. And I didn't have this, especially when I was younger. I didn't really have enough money to buy these books. It gets expensive, you know. And so I remember for years walking down Telegraph Street, and I would pass Mo's, one kind of bookstore, and then right next was Cody's on the corner. And as I would approach, the fact that I shouldn't be buying anything right now would just go away. Completely. It would completely go away. It's like my addiction, book addiction, took care of it. Just, okay, we're not going to think about that right now. And then I would just go into the bookstore and buy the books I wanted. And this happened over and over and over. And the other problem was I would buy more books than I could really read. Mm. And so I would get home with, instead of one interesting book, I would have three or four interesting books, you know. And you know what? Embarrassingly enough, the majority of those books were never read. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Or if they were read, it would just be a chapter or two. That's just addictive behavior. And I realized it at one point, that I'm addicted to this. And I realized how the buddhi, that, you know, is kind of the one that should, is kind of in control, would just disappear. Not available. Not available. And then, and like an unmanifest condition. And then, when that's the case, the desire has a free reign. And it just gets its way, because there's nobody left there to say no. So that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. It is a magic show that we're in. Mm-hmm. I look at it as Ishwara, which I don't want to, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't boggle on and say, yes, it's a magic show. It's okay to call that. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's it. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harih Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harih Om.